Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look to begin the show at the Mississippi River and life on the Upper Mississippi. Reggie McLeod with us by phone today. Reggie's from Winona, Minnesota. He's editor and publisher of Big River Magazine. It's a bi-monthly magazine for people who live or work or play or all those things on the Upper Mississippi River. So really pleased to have him with us today. Certainly, if you have questions as we move along about the river itself, about what to do over there, where to play, where to work, how to live, I hope you'll join in. We're going to be zeroing in a little bit today on Asian carp today because they're certainly present in the Mississippi and unfortunately may be present in the Great Lakes now. We're trying to keep them out. But Reggie probably has, I'm sure, has some insights on those Asian carp as well. So give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And, two, if you are someone who uses the Upper Mississippi, I'd love to hear about your own experiences, too, what you like and give us some advice on what you do and where to go. 1-800-642-1234. Reggie McLeod, as I said, with us by phone. Hi, Reggie.
Hi, Larry.
Great to have you back.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back.
I've been looking at your last couple of issues, and it's Asian carp. You've got them over in the Upper Mississippi, and you've got some stories, at least a story or two on them in your magazine.
Yeah, they seem to be moving into the river. They haven't been too common up in the stretch where we are, up in the Wisconsin stretch. Actually, most of them are in Clinton, Iowa, and downriver in the Illinois River, and I guess they're pretty thick in the Missouri River now too. Not a lot of them up here yet. They've spotted all three of the species, but I haven't seen any in this part of the river yet.
So that's a good thing. What's keeping them out, do you think?
Well, I was talking with Ron Benjamin just this morning. He's the Mississippi River Fish Supervisor for the Wisconsin DNR, and I wanted to get the most up-to-date information. And I don't know that they're really sure. They're kind of watching and waiting. They've spotted their first silver carp up here a little more than a year ago. A commercial fisherman caught some in a net, and those are the ones that you read about the most because those are the ones that jump up in the air when they're startled. They haven't seen any more since those two. So they're kind of hoping that there might be something that's keeping them from moving up here, but they don't know. It might just be a matter of time. They've been seeing grass carp up here for a long time, since the 80s, and those fish are actually stocked in ponds still in Iowa, Ron was telling me. So we can expect to keep seeing them, but there's not a lot of those either, a few more in the last few years. And then the bighead carp, they see one or two a year that a commercial fisherman might net. And you're probably not going to see them if you're fishing because they're filter feeders and they mostly eat algae, whereas your common carp eat vegetation. And I know when I was a kid and fished with worms a lot, I used to catch them. They were apparently eating worms. But these Asian carp, aren't going to hit on a lure or a worm likely. So you're less likely to see them, and that's why they kind of keep in touch with the commercial fishermen to watch their progress.
Okay. Well, some callers online. Let's go to Judy and Ripon first. Judy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. We enjoy the Mississippi River immensely, the Upper Mississippi. We've got a cabin halfway between Prairie du Chien and Linksville. I'm sure that the guest is familiar with the area.
Oh, sure. It's a beautiful stretch.
Oh, it is just absolutely beautiful. And we are really thrilled to see a lot more kayakers on the river because that's what we do. We kayak on the river. And we're glad to see that more of those kinds of sports are going on there in addition to all the other wonderful things. It's one of the best-kept secrets in the world, I think, that whole part of Wisconsin. But a few years back, I had heard somebody saying that there were, and I don't know if they were making reference to the Asian carp, but that there was some type of fish in the Mississippi that were able to, when they jumped like that, knock people over that are in small craft like a kayak or a canoe. Is there any truth to that? And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, those would be the silver carp. And it's a big deal on the Illinois River, especially now. And they do jump into boats, and they do hit people, and actually they've injured people. Broken gear. It's dangerous. And there's some good videos on YouTube. I'll bet if you went on YouTube and typed in silver carp, you'd see some interesting ones because it looks like popcorn. It doesn't look real. There are so many of them, and they all jump up at the same time. And supposedly they can weigh up to 100 pounds. It seems like they're getting bigger just in the last couple of years. They used to say they get up to 60 pounds, and now I see in stories that they get up to 100 pounds. But I think a 20-pound one could do a lot of damage if it smacked India like that. I haven't heard any reports of anyone being killed. And like I said earlier, they've only seen a couple of them in the Wisconsin stretch of the river, although down around the Quad Cities, I don't think they're very rare down there. So they may move up into this area, but we're kind of waiting and watching. The river's kind of different up here because the locks and dams separated into a series of pools, and that keeps the current down during much of the year. And there's some speculation that these Asian carp like to have more current than we have up here, and that might be slowing down their progress. But we're just going to have to wait and watch and kind of be careful, I guess.
But so far, kayaking in that part where you're located, Judy, you're not too likely to be running into many silver carp.
Yeah, you could get hit by a fish. In fact, Ron and I were talking about this morning, and he's heard of northerns, you know, jumping up and hitting people. And in the spring, the common carp, which are an invasive species from Asia as well, but they've been here over 100 years, they jump up out of the water a lot in the spring. And I've paddled back into the backwaters and seen them jumping around me, but I never really felt threatened, and I haven't heard of anyone getting smacked by one of them. And I have no idea why they do that. But it's in April, usually. It's the only time you see them do that. They'll jump straight out of the water and just flop back in.
Let's turn to Dick in Waukesha next. Dick, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I will ask the guest, is there any kind of connection between the Mississippi River, I'm talking about up around Grand Rapids and Duluth and that area, between the Mississippi River and Lake Superior?
No, there isn't. They're entirely separate watersheds. However, and I shouldn't reveal this because we usually don't tell stories that we're going to run, but I was just editing a story the other day about a canal that was proposed at one time between the St. Croix River and the Brule River.
I'll bet.
Yeah, it would have opened shipping between the two watersheds, and of course it would have opened a connection for invasive species to move between the Mississippi River watershed and the Great Lakes watershed. That was never built, but it would have had to have a series of locks because there's a big ridge in between those two watersheds. However, there's some wetlands up there that flow both into the Brule and eventually into the St. Croix. And I was talking with the writer who was up there hiking last winter, kind of exploring it, and he said it would be difficult for a fish to get from one watershed to the other, you know, through these wetlands. There's not, like, a lot of open water there for them to move through. But then Portage, too, is a connection between the Fox River and the Wisconsin River. And that's why it's called Portage, is people used to use that to pass between the watersheds. And there's a big marshy area there too, that used to drain into both. But I believe that there was a levee built to separate the watersheds there to kind of isolate invasive species from moving between the watersheds. Because I was curious about that one, too, because I knew about Portage, but I think they anticipated that might be a problem and built a levee there.
That'd be another way to get into the Great Lakes.
Yeah, yeah. Or the other way around, because, you know, we have zebra mussels in the Mississippi River thanks to the Great Lakes. And those probably came down that same waterway through Chicago and down the Illinois River attached to a barge. So, you know, maybe the Mississippi watershed is returning the favor by sending carp over towards the Great Lakes. But, yeah, we probably wouldn't have zebra mussels here if it wasn't for that connection.
Well, I think Obama may regret that he didn't, of course, closing the gates between the lower Lake Michigan and the Sag Canal and the sanitary and shipping canal is a tough job. But 100 years from now, 1,000 years from now, will they be saying he fiddled with summit meetings while the carp were crossing the barrier? I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to undo that when they get in. It's like the lampreys that got into the Great Lakes, and they caused a great deal of damage. They're kind of somewhat under control now, but once a species moves into another territory like that, it's virtually impossible to get rid of them.
Well, here's hoping.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Dick, for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking about the Mississippi River, and well, we're actually getting into carp and the Great Lakes as well, but zeroing in a bit on life on the upper Mississippi today with Reggie McLeod. If you'd like to join in with your own question or comment about the river, I hope you will. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. You were working at Big River trying to popularize carp as a dining delicacy. I think we talked about that the last time you were on, trying to persuade some restaurants on the river to add Asian carp to their menu. Any successes there?
Well, we take any kind of carp, even the old common carp. We did a contest challenging restaurants near the river to put a carp dish on the permanent menu. And carp is a delicacy. Common carp is a delicacy in Eastern Europe. The first time I ate it, it was being prepared for Christmas dinner by a Polish family, a friend of mine's family in the Detroit area. And that's their most important meal of the year, and carp was the centerpiece for that. And gefilte fish has common carp or Asian carp now in it very often. And in Asia, these species that are such a problem around here are considered to be pretty good eating over there. So I'm convinced that some of our skilled chefs in the upper Mississippi River area could cook up some great carp dishes. And we're trying to get him to do that. We had a contest last year, and we didn't have a single entry, which was kind of frustrating. But then I realized, well, maybe that's the news. And so we you know, kind of got the word out that apparently there's not a single restaurant, and we cover a little more than 400 miles of the river, and we haven't even heard a report of anyone serving them. There's a place in Omaha called Joe Tess Place that serves a tremendous volume of fried carp sandwiches. And they're very popular, and they've been doing this since the 1930s. And since we did this publicity, I've had a number of people. I went to the bank the other day, and the teller gave me a recipe that her mom used to make carp. And we were getting letters from people with carp recipes. And it's kind of a mystery to me why we stopped eating it. And I used to buy smoked carp here in Winona. There was a commercial fisherman that had a small fish store that smoked carp, and he made pickled carp, and he even did an experiment with canned carp once. And those are quite good. He gave me some of those, and I made sandwiches out of them, and they were good. It's as good as any other fish.
Something in our heads, you know?
Well, you know, we love lobsters, and lobsters are big bugs. I mean, I hate to say it, but they're more closely related to spiders,
yes,
than they are to fish. And that doesn't seem to bother anyone. Shrimp are kind of in that same category, and crayfish, they're more like scorpions or spiders than they are fish. But we get over that.
Reggie McLeod, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hi, this is Ben Marins, host of At Issue. I hope you'll join me later today. We'll review Governor Doyle's final State of the State address delivered last night. That's after 4. After 5, we'll pick up on a current issue in the news and talk about it. For it's all At Issue later today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wisconsin Public Radio welcomes A Prairie Home Companion, live on the big screen, Thursday, February 4th at Point Cinema on Madison's West Side. Find out more at wpr.org/Madison.
Talking about the Upper Mississippi River today with Reggie McLeod, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine. It's a bi-monthly magazine for people who live, work, or play on the Upper Mississippi River. Take a look at their website. It's BigRiverMagazine.com, BigRiverMagazine.com. Christopher in East Troy up next with a comment or question. Hi, Christopher.
Good morning, gentlemen. I want to ask a question to the guest if he knows if they're using the common carp trap that the Australians are using where the carp hits it. And on that impact, it actually jumps out of the water, and then that's where the trap is.
Oh.
No, I haven't seen that. I'm going to have to learn more about that.
Yeah, there's a guy by the name of Stewart, I understand, invented it, and he's a national hero over there in Australia. But I'm on a site right now, fishingmonthly.com, and they have an article about it.
I'll have to look that up. Thanks for the tip. That is that just then trapping the silver carp?
Yes, it says it separates the carp, and it doesn't hurt. No other fish goes into it. But look under fishingmonthly.com.au.
Okay.
And it's been an article on there.
I'll do that. Thanks.
That's interesting.
Well, you know, and speaking about magazines, there are several magazines in England that are dedicated entirely to fishing for the common carp. That's, I think it might be the most popular game fish over there.
Wow.
And people, and there are fishing stores, tackle stores, that specialize in tackle for the carp fishermen.
You know, I've caught a lot of carp over the years, not much in recent years, but I always thought they were pretty good fighting fish, actually.
Yeah, they do put up a struggle, and they get pretty big, and I've been wanting. I used to catch them as a kid, and I keep promising myself every summer I'm going to go out and fish for them. And I've been fishing a lot from a solo canoe, and that's made me a little frightened because every once in a while, you know, once I hooked a big northern. It was probably about 36 inches around there, and it was pulling me all over the place. It gave me quite a ride, and I thought, boy, what happens if I hook a 20-pound carp? You know, I'm going to be all over the river. But people do specialize in it around here. A lot of times they get a big hook, and they cover it with canned corn. It's supposedly a great bait for carp. And I'm going to do that one of these days. I'm told that the Commercial Harbor is a good place because they spill a lot of corn in the water, and the carp hang out there, the big ones, the monster carp hang out there.
All right, well, let's go to Emil in Middleton next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Still a lot of corn in the water and the monster.
Let's see. Let's try Matt in Reedsburg. Matt, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Just wondering, are the carp more highly contaminated with mercury since they're larger, older fish, or are they not because they don't feed on smaller fish so much?
Well, generally, they're pretty good, but you have to qualify that. In the Mississippi, mercury isn't as much of a problem because there's a lot of minerals in the water, and it doesn't stay suspended like it does in the more pristine, clear lakes up north. You know, PCBs and dioxins and things like that are more likely to show up in the river, but that varies a lot from stretch to stretch. And generally, looking through the fish advisories, carp come out pretty good. There are places, you know, in the Twin Cities area, you probably don't want to eat any fish from the river. And there are spots where they might be a problem. But as you said, because they're not as high up on the food chain, they're eating more vegetation and smaller animals. They don't concentrate contaminants the way, you know, walleyes or bass or you know, your standard game fish would. So generally speaking, they're safer to eat than the fish that most people prefer to eat, like walleyes and bass. But all of the states have fish advisories, and it's interesting, on the same sections of the Mississippi River, if you look at the Minnesota Fish Advisory and the Wisconsin Fish Advisory, they don't always agree. but for carp, yeah, they're pretty safe in most stretches. It's a pretty safe fish to eat in general.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Tom in Green Bay next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Well, it's nice to hear that the carp are clean on the Mississippi. Green Bay used to be one of the great harvesting areas for carp. And when they were first declared, when the FDA came in, Department of Ag, in 1966, that was one of the first species banned for sale. And along the west shore of Green Bay, in fact, just last year on the Suamico River, they took out one of the big cement barriers they had on a backwater that used to be one of the live holding ponds. And they used to harvest carp out of Green Bay, keep them alive by feeding them corn, and then ship them live down to Milwaukee, Chicago, and St. Louis. It was one of the real big industries here, and that went totally out with pollution.
Oh.
There are still people who catch some carp, and they pickle them. Some people smoke them. But for the most part, you know, our population here is so contaminated you can't eat a carp.
Oh.
Yeah, the dioxins from the Fox River.
PCBs.
And the PCBs.
Yep, and just about everything else.
Yeah, that's been a big problem on the river in Green Bay, and it might take a long time for that to kind of work its way out of the system.
But there are people that fish for them. Some people bull hunt them. But there are believe it or not, there are people up in Door County that come up there for some of the big carp in the middle of summer when it's warm and they're starting to spawn, and they will fly fish for them.
Oh. Yeah.
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 And I guess it's really a chase.
Yeah, they fly fish in England. That's I think, the most popular way to fish for them is with a fly rod. It's hard for me to imagine.
It's hard to believe, you know.
Yeah.
And I do know a story from an old DNR guy, Leroy Lintier, who once told me that down by Pensauki, the carp were rolling so bad he was afraid they were going to tip his canoe over. They were that thick and that many.
And they get really huge, too.
Yep.
In the river, they get huge, too. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Somebody else emailed in to say back in the 70s there were government warnings about eating carp due to the PCBs and other chemicals. So that's probably, you know, where one of the reasons why people have gotten away from eating them. Here's another email from Sean. Normally we do we'd be cross-country skiing on the backwaters this time of the year, but with the recent rains, the ice has smoothed out in many areas, and the ice skating has been pretty good. Skating on the backwaters is a great way to explore areas you don't get to see often and offers plenty of solitude. I've never seen another person other than a trapper or two out on one of my skating tours. That's Sean from Fountain City.
Oh, yeah. That's I'm glad he mentioned that. And it's kind of a rare condition that you have good skating on the river. You know, some falls and ice to skate a lot, and sometimes if it doesn't snow for a while and it gets really cold, the ice will be just perfect, and it'll be clear enough you can see little frozen fish in the ice, and get out on the backwaters and get around to a lot of places, and of course the skiing is good too. You have to be careful because it's a river, and a lot of the backwaters have springs. So especially when there's snow on there, you can't always tell whether there's ice under the snow. So it's always a good idea to be prepared in case someone does break through, and it's a bad idea to go out there by yourself. I had a friend that fell through and died while skiing on the backwaters. And if someone, you know, if you would have had a friend out there skiing with him, that might not have ended that way. And in my younger days, I have skated and hiked out into the backwaters by myself when I shouldn't have in the winter. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But you get, you know, you have to be a little cautious too.
Let's turn to Al in Land O'Lakes next. Al, hello to you.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
I had two comments. First of all, about President Obama being responsible for them not closing off that channel in Chicago River, and maybe you could respond to what really happened with the Supreme Court. And then second, about carp. I hate to disparage the species, but I went to Stevens Point, took fisheries back in the early 70s, and I also worked for Dairyland Powers Fish Research Center in La Crosse. And carp are always considered a trash fish, as far as everybody I know seems to think. And then about Lake Pepin, how all the sediments seem, and PCBs and all the heavy metals seem to settle out there, and the river's actually clean between Lake Pepin and down through Genoa. But anyway, I don't like carp, and I'll hang up and...
All right. And hear what Reggie's got to say. Hi, Reggie.
Hi. Well, that's a few questions there. Well, you know, any kind of fish is the matter of taste, and I didn't know this, but I found out this last fall that actually the female carp tastes better than the male carp. And the Asian carp, I think you could fry up Asian carp or common carp and set them side by side with walleyes or, you know, any other fish and have people sample them. And if they didn't know what they were eating, I think most people who like river fish would enjoy the carp. Now, I've done that with pickled carp and pickled herring back when I could buy pickled carp in Winona here. And I didn't even tell people. People assumed they were both herring. And I'd say, oh, which fish do you like the most? And people most often like the pickled carp better than the pickled herring. So it's a matter of taste. And even if you get smoked carp, the flavor varies a lot because people have different recipes for smoking it. The only place I know of in Wisconsin now to get smoked carp, and there are probably others, but there's Mike Valley Fish and Cheese down in Prairie du Chien, and his smoked carp are pretty dry and sweet, and other smoked carp I've had have been kind of oily. Sometimes they're more moist and have more oil in them, so even the same carp prepared by different people will taste different. So I would encourage the caller to... No, he doesn't have to try more carp, but if he's curious, he might try some, because it varies a lot. Trash fish is just a term that is applied sometimes even to native fish, which are popular eating fish. You know, they say carp are bottom feeders, and ducks are bottom feeders, and lobsters are bottom feeders, and catfish are bottom feeders. So, you know, those are just words that doesn't really define how they taste or how clean they are. And the reason I advise people to check the fish advisories is that's true. You know, the quality of all types of fish, not just carp, very, you know, depends on where you catch them. And even though the river is generally cleaner below Lake Pepin, they're kind of hot spots where maybe there was a factory at one time that might have been dumping things into the river, or maybe below a tributary, the water quality might be different. So it really does vary, and if you look at the fish advisories, they usually have a different one for each pool, and the pools are the sections of rivers between the dams, and they're generally about 30 or 40 mile sections of the river, and they treat them all differently for walleye and bluegill, as well as, you know, for carp and other fish that people might want to eat.
Jim Packard showed me an email or a little story on the Joe Tess place in Omaha, Nebraska, that you were talking about earlier, Reggie. And they serve thousands and thousands of carp sandwiches at that restaurant. So, Al, if you're ever in Omaha, Nebraska, you better stop at the Joe Tess place on South 24th Street in Omaha and try them out because apparently people just absolutely love the way that he makes them.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to going there, too. I just found out about the place, I think last spring someone told me about it. And next time I go through Omaha, I know where I'm having lunch.
Okay. Jane in Big, I think, he also had a comment about President Obama.
Oh, yeah. You know,
I think it was President Obama who put the kibosh to that. But
yeah, it was the Supreme Court, and it's a struggle between the states. And when it comes to river issues and lake issues, it gets very complicated. And we could do a number of shows about that. And I hate to express my opinion, but, well, no, I don't. But I don't know that that's going to enlighten anybody at this point. It's a complicated issue, and the reason they don't close it, there are two reasons. One is for the shipping, although I have seen a study that showed that it would only, you could close it and you'd only, you could close a part of it that where only about 200 barges a year move, which wouldn't have a huge economic impact. But I don't know that much about that. The other issue with closing it.
Flooding.
Well, not so much flooding. It's the sewage from Chicago. There are some flooding issues as well, but Chicago still puts untreated sewage into that river, and that's why they made those canals initially. The shipping came later. They didn't want to, you know, Milwaukee, for instance, didn't want them putting their raw sewage into the into Lake Michigan, and so they dug that canal and they put all their raw sewage into the Illinois River. Well, they've cleaned up most of that, so it's much cleaner, and the Illinois River is much cleaner, but there is still a lot of raw sewage that goes down that river, and if they blocked off that canal, are people going to be comfortable with Chicago putting that into Lake Michigan? Now, they're in the process of cleaning that up, and in a few years, almost all of that will be processed, and there'll be no reason to dump it anywhere, but if you closed it today, they'd have to make that decision. They'd probably have to put it into Lake Michigan, and that's one of the reasons that they're hesitating doing that. I don't think they can stop a fish with these. They have electric barriers there that are supposed to keep the carp out, but I don't really have much confidence in it. It's never been tested before, and you know, when the fish first hatch, they're very tiny, and that electricity would have a real minimum impact on them when they're that small, because it's really a function of the size of the fish. So a bigger fish gets a bigger jolt than a smaller fish, and a really tiny, just hatched fish wouldn't get much of a jolt at all. So I'm skeptical of that barrier working. So it's a very complicated issue. It's a difficult issue. And I don't know that Obama has stuck his neck out yet, because anyone who does is likely to catch some flack, because it's going to cause a problem somewhere else. But of course, you know, the carp are going to cause an enormous problem if they get into the Great Lakes too. So it's a matter of values. It's a matter of which problem is more important, I guess.
Let's turn to Jane in Big Bend. Jane, hello to you.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
I just wanted to say that, you know, years ago we used to smoke the carp in an outdoor smoker, and it was like a delicacy, like you had said. And when we had too much to smoke, we always used it in the garden. I had that the year I had the best tomatoes and peppers and all my gardening for the fertilizer.
So you stuck the fish right in the ground if you didn't smoke them.
Exactly. We just kind of dug a trench in the pathway of my gardens and buried them. And I had some peppers that were so plentiful they were up to my waist.
Yeah. When I was a kid and we would catch them, we would sometimes give them away if there were different people. If there were people fishing there from different ethnic backgrounds, sometimes my dad would take the fish over and offer them, and people really appreciated getting the carp. You know, you could tell that they liked eating them. But if we couldn't give them away and we didn't throw them back in the water because they wouldn't have lived, we brought them home and put them under the roses and used them for fertilizer. And the biggest fish processor in our stretch of the river is Schaefer Fisheries down in Thompson, Illinois, which is where they're trying to ship the Guantanamo inmates into the prison in the same little town, river town. He processes thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds of carp. He freezes a lot of it and sends it to Israel for gefilte fish, but he uses all of the byproducts of that processing to make a liquid fertilizer that's an organic fertilizer. And I'll tell you, that part of the factory is...
humming, huh?
Kind of, it's busy, but it kind of dulls your sense of smell pretty quickly. But it's a real popular fertilizer, and they gave me a little bottle of it that I used on my garden, and it worked well, and it surprised me that it hardly smelled at all once I mixed it with some water and applied it. So those guys use... Every bit of the fish, all the scales and bones and skin and organs all go into that fertilizer. And they sell it by the truckload, too. You know, it's not just gardeners that buy it. It's serious organic farmers that buy that and use it as well.
Hmm. Thanks, Jane.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. And Jennifer in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi, Jen.
Hi, good morning. You know, carp show, but since it's actually a show about the Mississippi.
Yeah, go back to that. Something else.
I was wondering if your guests could talk about some of the more prime eagle roosting areas in the winter along the upper Mississippi, if there's any structured viewing areas or what they can recommend for where to go to see the most bald eagles that you can this time of year.
Well, that's a good question, and there are a lot of bald eagles here. And what the bald eagles are doing when they congregate, and sometimes they congregate into flocks of more than 100 of them, they're doing that because those backwaters freeze over, and there's very little open water on the river. And so they gather the open water and eat gizzard shad largely. And gizzard shad is a filter feeder, like the Asian carp, that eats algae. And it doesn't do well in cold water, so a lot of them die off during the winter and float up in that open water, and the eagles go down there and feed on the gizzard shad. The places where that happens most often is right below the locks and dams. So almost any lock and dam in the downstream side of it, you're going to find congregations of eagles. And the number of eagles kind of depends on the temperature, because if there still are a lot of backwaters open and other stretches of the water open, they'll be more dispersed. Spillways, too. I know in Onalaska, which is just upstream from La Crosse, there's a spillway right by downtown Onalaska, and people sometimes see over 100 eagles roosting in the trees over that spillway. Cassville has an eagle watching days. There's a lot of festivals this time of year. Wabasha, Minnesota has the National Eagle Center, and there are eagles there because there's kind of a place, probably because of upwelling, there's a place right by downtown Wabasha that stays open in the winter, and eagles congregate around there. Up at Reed's Landing, Minnesota, again, there's a place where the river stays open, and there's a lot of eagles up around there. And we list some eagle watch events. Let me look here real quick and see if any are coming up in the next weekend. A lot of these are down in Iowa. Elma on January 24th had eagle watch, and they you can view them indoors at Elma. They have a really nice Wings Over Alma Center, and it's a combination art gallery, and it has information about eagles and about the area. And you can sit inside and watch the eagles below the Alma Lock and Dam. It's very comfortable, and there are usually binoculars or spotting scopes you can use. And if you want to step out, they've got a nice little kind of balcony there where you can be outside and view the eagles, and you're pretty close to them. Cassville, January 30 and 31st at Riverside Park in Cassville High School. Red Wing, Minnesota on February 20th through March 21st at Colville Park, which is right on the river on downstream into town. Prairie du Chien, February 27th at the Regional Tourist Center there, right at the bottom of the bridge. Ferryville on the same weekend, February 27th at the Village Hall in Ferryville. And then all during the month of March is Soar with Eagles time at that National Eagle Center in Wabasha. And they have volunteers and telescopes and everything there in their viewing area. Sauk City Prairie du Sac had eagle viewing on January 16th. So I'm not going to go over the ones that are over.
Yeah, we had some guests on to talk about that event, which is a pretty popular one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Reggie, we are out of time. I thank you so much for being with us today. And again, for subscribing to your magazine or for just learning more about it, I think online, go to BigRiverMagazine.com. I've got that right, BigRiverMagazine.com.
Yep.
And then you've got an 800 number, too, haven't you?
Yes, 1-800-303-8201.
1-800-303-8201.
Yes.
Thanks, Reggie.
Thank you, Larry. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Reggie McLeod of Winona, Minnesota, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine, a bi-monthly magazine for people who live, work, or play on the Upper Mississippi. And again, their website is BigRiverMagazine.com, or you can give them a call at 800-303-8201. Well, coming up, we're going to be talking with you about some efforts to promote and get Wisconsin foods into Wisconsin's grocery stores. A couple of guests coming up next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.